Hello, everybody. This is episode 388. Can you believe it? Of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, Benny and I are going to discuss, as the title suggests, is your kid any good? But a little bit of context before we get into the show. I received an email from a concerned father, if I can say that, about his son. And his son was, I believe, 13 years old, was the prototypical man child. The father admittedly said he didn't know anything about soccer, so he's looking for a little bit of guidance, a little bit of insight as to what to look for if his kid is actually any good or what his deficiencies may be. Because as our audience well knows, if you're a man child at the youth level, usually you're dominant or kind of dominating, and it masks a whole bunch of deficiencies, which is right in line with the ethos of 343, which is trying to up the level of discernment from everybody who cares about soccer, everybody who watches soccer, everybody who works in the soccer space itself. How can we tell whether A is better than B, and B is better than C, so on and so forth? So I hope you enjoy this one. And of course, we only sponsor this episode via the products and services that 343 offer, which are coaching education and parent education. For coaching education, coaches, go and learn from the best in the business, Brian Kleiben, who pioneered a revolution, I would say, here in American youth soccer. With his experience spanning over the course of 2 decades, you can learn straight from him via video and audio capture of him actually training his actual players and teams. There is no scripting of the courses or the program, so you get to see the real raw way in which he interacts, real and raw execution of the activities, real and raw way in which he does corrective actions, etc., etc. Thousands of coaches have gone through the program, and of those who've taken it seriously, we have countless testimonials of how it helped catapult their coaching careers, their players, their teams, their clubs. So where do you get all this information? It is at 343coaching.com. You can start off with the free 7-week course, or you can jump head into the premium course, which is the one that's actually going to get you from point A to point Z in your coaching. Parents, you are critical to the development of your child. I think that goes without saying, but I'm not so sure that people really understand how influential you are, or maybe you guys yourselves may not be fully aware of how influential you are in the development of your kid's soccer trajectory. So for you, you want to go to 343masterclass.com. Last time, coaches, 343coaching.com, and parents, 343masterclass.com. If you happen to be coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 soccer format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, there are, and I'm not kidding here, a wealth of gold nuggets in this episode, this 1-hour episode with Benny Rogers. I hope you enjoy. Here we go.
I've wanted to record on the topic of player evaluations. That was what I had on the agenda, specifically in terms of the coach evaluating the players. But I think we can also get into how can parents evaluate their players, especially if they're new to the game and don't have much information. And it's funny that you just sent me earlier today, a parent had reached out to you. I'm going to read his message to you. He says, "Hey, I just started listening to your podcast. It's been really good so far. Just finished the masterclass series. After that, I'm discouraged for my son. He is the tall, athletic 13-year-old, maybe considered the man child. He plays for an ECNL, but now I'm wondering, is he even good or just athletic? How does one go about figuring out where your kid is at this environment? I am pretty clueless about soccer, but doing as much research as I can." So I think this fits in perfectly, Gary, with the topic that I wanted to discuss. So I guess with this message, we can start on the parent side. In this guy's case, Gary, I mean, he said it himself. He says he's pretty clueless about soccer. So how can he evaluate? Is his son the man child and just kind of getting away with this stuff at this age because he's big and athletic? Or does his son actually have quality? How does he go about figuring that out?
It's a really, really good question, Ben. Really good question. And we found ourselves historically asking ourselves that question of our own players that we've been coaching over the course of many, many years. It's like, yeah, but Brian, like, is he really that good? You know, like, what's it going to look like when he's 18 or when he's 20 or when he's 17 or whatever. And we would have these debates back and forth constantly. So I know where the gentleman is coming from. First and foremost, the humility of saying that he doesn't know anything about soccer is very important, extremely important. And that you're doing your homework is also extremely important. So let's see. I think the most obvious answer is, okay, try to look at the things that don't involve athleticism. That's the most obvious answer. Okay, so what does that involve? That involves things like, do you receive a pass or ball correctly? And you start with the basics that we've spoken about for over 10 years here, Benny, or 15 years, is does the player, when he receives a ball, does he receive it across his body? So if it's coming from the left, does he receive it with the right foot? If it's coming from the right, does he receive it with the left foot? If the ball is coming at an awkward angle, or like, does the player reorient their body so that they can execute what I just finished describing? You know, that's, you know, manipulating your body position. So those things right there already expose 99% of youth players at age 13. Massive exposure. You can see it immediately. So you start with that. And then, since I think, is the player a striker? It sounds like he's a forward because maybe he's athletic.
Yeah, you know what, Gary? That's what I was thinking too. And he gives a little background. Let me read it really quick. So a little background: at U11, he was placed on the second team in our local competitive team. U12, he was moved up to the first team. He didn't make ODP that year. U13, he made one of the two ESNL teams in the state. Also, he made ODP. For this coming year, he got bids from both ESNL teams. He went through puberty before all of his teammates. He has generally been the tallest, but now he was also the fastest and strongest. He is a center back in a 3-5-2 formation. Last thing I should note, when he didn't make the first team with all of his friends, he started running, juggling, and wall work in the mornings before school. So he has put in work. If he hadn't, I would definitely know it's just his athleticism. And yeah, credit to the kid for not folding, bro.
Yeah, 100%. And am I to understand, sorry to keep asking questions, am I to understand that he now is like making the top teams, or is still kind of in that zone where he's kind of making it, but not really? Because let me answer my own question, because if he's in that zone where he's not making quote unquote first teams, or he's barely making it, or he's kind of trying to, then that already also tells you that the kid is not a superstar crack phenom at all. Like, he might be athletic, big, fast, strong, but clearly you're not at that next level, if you will. Because if you already have the athletic components at age 13, if you have it above everybody else and you still struggle to make the top teams, then that tells you you're greatly deficient in all the other stuff.
Well, I will say he's on an ECNL team. There is some quality within ECNL. I think ECNL is considered the step right below MLS Next, which is what everybody considers right now currently the best, you know, youth league possible. But it could also be a situation where maybe he's not even anywhere near an MLS program or academy like that. So the fact that he's making an ECNL team, you know, this kid, I'm sure he's decent. I'm sure he has quality.
Got it. But you have deficiencies if you're kind of not a superstar.
Yeah.
I don't know. I suspect that if he was like the top of the top, you know, the father wouldn't be messaging me. Usually that's what happens. Like, I don't think I've had a situation where a player is top of the top and the father is coming to tell me, hey, Gary, I'm not so sure about, you know, the situation of my kid. But that's not very helpful to him, right? So what is helpful to him is what I just mentioned, right? Receiving across your body, he said he listened to the Masterclass series, which are a series of podcast episodes that you and I did, Benny, a handful of months back. So that's good. And then, I mean, within those series, we talked about other things to look out for. So like, a center back should also know how to, you know, find space and time, you know, how to back pedal, how to forward pedal, how to split lines on the ground to, you know, inject passes to your midfielders and even to your nine, how to put in diagonal balls that are 30 yards away. Because at 13 years of age, if you have kind of hit puberty and gone through puberty or in that athletic sort of mold, you can hit a 30-yard long ball without any issues, you know, a 40-yard cross-field ball. So you should be able to do that. You should be able to start working on disguised passes. If you don't know what a disguised pass is, I think those episodes talked about it a little bit. And if not, maybe we can look up episode numbers of where we talk about it. And obviously, if you're in the masterclass itself, the actual program, where we have a whole module or lesson dedicated to disguised passes. And then obviously, if you're a center back, you need to be good in the aerial game too. So one such thing is, do you actually know how to do a proper defensive header or defensive headers? For example, if the ball is coming at you in the air and you're in your own 18-yard box, you don't want to head the ball downwards or very low. You want to head the ball very high up in the air, okay, and kind of away from goal, because that gives you your whole team 3 or 4 seconds to kind of recover and put themselves in proper positions. So that is a good, proper defensive header. Is the player doing that, or does he not even aware of doing that? And if you are or are not aware of it, well, you still have to get good at it, right? So that's something to work on. Another good defensive header is kind of, instead of just doing it high up in the air, do it high up in the air, but at a diagonal, right? So think about aiming to the corner of your 18-yard box and getting it out of the 18-yard box, but aiming it at the corner. So even better, because not only does your team recover, but now the opponent, if they happen to get the ball, they are constrained in space, you know, so they're not dangerous at all. So just a couple little examples for you to concentrate on. And obviously technique, you can never get good enough at technique, Ben.
For me, Gary, here's the hard part about being that man-child type player at such a young age. When I first read Manchild, I was thinking that he's a striker and he's scoring 15 goals a game or, you know, and a kid can have shocking technique and still get away with that, right? But as a center back, you do have to be a little bit more technically polished in order to get away with those types of things. But you can still be a Manchild that is good in the air, can launch it farther than all of his teammates at that age, which, you know, some ECNL coaches might want, bro. And the fact that he's fast, he's big, he's strong. Look, Gary, I have no idea about this kid. I've never seen a footage of him. I don't know where he plays, who he is. I have a feeling that those type of intricacies that you describe, like disguise passes, line breaking passes, I have a feeling he's not doing those types of things. And can it be learned? 1000%. But, you know, like you said, if the kid was top level, like, you know, I think that the dad would know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thank him for the message. I think it's good to be doing your research and your homework. And I think it's especially good if your kid is dominant or close to dominant or semi-dominant at the youngest age levels, to not be deceived and deluded into thinking that you're something that you're not. Because I can almost guarantee you, in this game that is a global game, you're not that special. There's countless players, not only in your local area, in your regional area, in your state, in your multi-state, national level. I mean, there's so many players out there, Benny. And if you're not aware how big the soccer world is, you might delude yourself into thinking that, oh, yeah, the kid that I coach, he's top of the top. Or my son, he's top of the top. And it's just not true. So it's good. And frankly speaking, you should never think it's true. You should never think it's true. Think about a player like Gio Reyna, right? At age 17, you know, instead of signing a MLS homegrown contract with New York City FC, his dad, who was the technical director of New York City FC, took his kid to Germany, to Borussia Dortmund, right? Did not have him sign here in the United States. That's a whole other story unto itself, a whole other can of worms that we can uncork someday. But he went to Germany. And you're considered like among the best, if not the best prospect in the United States and all this stuff. And the kid never plays at Dortmund. And all the fan base here in the United States, and he's been elevated like a mother effer by everybody in the United States. The U.S. men's national team has been elevating him like crazy. Even if he doesn't play pro club minutes or he's struggling to get minutes, it doesn't matter. You know, Greg Berhalter would call him in and give him national team minutes because that keeps a player's career alive. You know what I'm saying? If the national team wouldn't keep calling him up, irrespective of his bad club situation, then the player withers on the vine and dies and nobody knows about him and he won't have many more opportunities and he'll just drift to zero, basically. But my point here is, even a player like that, who you think is top of the top of the top, look, you go elsewhere in the world and like, who is Gio Reyna? Like, he looked like he might have been something, but he's struggling. Doesn't mean he won't be something. He still has a long way to go. He's 22 years old, but it's a competitive world out there.
Yeah, here's something that he also said that I didn't mention, but I think it's important because it seems to me like this goal is the goal of the dad is not for his son to be a world-class player. I mean, he says at the end, I was hoping my kid could someday play varsity his senior year of high school and play in college as well. And here's a crazy line. I dropped 20K last year between ECNL and ODP stuff. That's insane, bro. Insane.
And to be clear to the gentleman who sent me this message, it just happened moments ago, Benny. I didn't even have time to read it because I was scrambling. I just moved into a new place. I was scrambling with movers and stuff. I literally just copied and pasted it and sent it to you that you, if you wanted to bring it up, you can bring it up. So I have not even read the message. So all apologies to the gentleman if for whatever reason my response seems a little out of whack and not in sync with your message.
Yeah. No, but I mean, Gary, if that's a kid's goal, I mean, that's totally reasonable. He doesn't need to be this top world-class center back, like, you know, kids around the world. This kid's on the right track, bro. And even the fact 100%. That he didn't make the teams that he wanted to, and then he spent time on the wall, spent time doing conditioning, that shows resilience in the kid, bro. I mean, and the fact that right now he's on an ECNL team, bro, guarantee you he'll make varsity, at least by his sophomore or junior year. Can he go on to play D1 college? Maybe. You know, it's tough to say, but for sure, a D2, D3, NAIA, if that's the goal, 1,000% this kid can make it there, bro. You know, is he going to be a top world-class center back one day? You know, you never know. It could be a one in a million outlier, but yeah, dude, if this is the goal, then... And that's why I think it's important for not just the parents, but also the players to establish their goals, because the level of your goal is going to define how much work that you're going to put into it. You know, if it was his goal to be a pro player, he's going to be having to doing way more than he's doing right now, you know, but the fact that, hey, I want to play varsity in high school and I want to go on to play college, like, keep doing what you're doing.
I agree, man. And again, like, I'm sorry, I just didn't know the context. You know, I just read the first message, which was very short, very simple, which said, hey, I listen to the podcast episodes. I have a kid who fits the big, fast, strong thing. So he's kind of dominant because of that. And now I don't know whether he's actually any good or not, you know, because he's dominant with the other thing. So that leads me into the realm that I described to you, right? So I went down here's another parent who thinks maybe his kid has the capabilities of being a professional soccer player, but that's not the context. The context is what you just said. And I agree wholeheartedly. He's on the right track.
Yeah. I will say, Gary, what I've seen a lot from these man-child type of players is that they get away with being technically, you know, deficient at the youth ages, and they just rely on their athleticism and speed. And then by the time they get to 17, 18, when everybody has leveled up to them, and now everybody's as strong and as fast as you, like, you get left behind. So I think it's important for this player to, like, bro, get on the wall every single day, continue working on your touch, continue working on those little line breaking passes and those specific types of defensive headers. Because right now he could be the best player on the team without having all those qualities. But when it comes time for him being older, like, think about how many other players are doing the same thing, dude.
I always look at things in math terms or science terms, right? Because that's my background. So there's like two curves at play, right? There is the physical curve. Actually, if you really want to think about it, there's four curves, okay? There's the technical, tactical, physical, psychological. But let's stick with just like the athleticism and the soccer-specific tactical sort of things. So there's two curves, right? He is currently high up on the athleticism curve and everybody else is below, right? So you've got that. But there might be other kids who are low on the athleticism curve, but are ahead of this kid in the technical tactical development curve, you see? So they'll naturally get better at the athleticism or the size thing once they hit puberty, go through puberty. So they can eat, they by the very fact of nature itself, they'll catch up to the other physical kid. They don't really have to do much. They're going to become physical also, to your point. But if this particular kid doesn't work on the technical tactical curve, getting up on that curve, then when the other guys catch you up on your curve that you're dominant and you didn't do the work on the other one, you're screwed because they have two things and you still have one thing.
Yeah, 100%, dude. I'm still kind of caught up on his last sentence of I dropped 20K. 20K. It would be great if this guy could send like some type of like spreadsheet that went over the expenses of all the, that's insane, bro. And the kid's
Who is 12 years old, 20K?
Bro. I don't know, dude. Okay. So I'm guessing he's on an ECNL team. They do a bunch of traveling. He also made ODP. So flights, hotels. I'm guessing the ECNL costs are probably close to $5,000 a year. I don't know, man. That's insane, bro.
Yeah, because 20K, I don't know how you get to 20K.
That's what I said. Yeah, dude. I want to see the spreadsheet, bro.
Yeah. Like the most I've heard of is maybe like an 8K, 10K sort of stuff. Like that's kind of what I always figured was in the ballpark.
Yeah. This guy might be flying first class to his son's games, bro. I believe him though, dude. I believe him.
Personal trainers?
Maybe, yeah. So Gary, how can he, the parent, develop a better soccer eye? Is it just watching high level games? Obviously, I know you're also going to say go through the 343 parent masterclass, you know, because this is exactly what it was built for. But how, as the kid gets older, you know, this guy's going to want to be able to, hey, am I going to continue to drop 20K on my son or should I focus on other things?
I don't know, man. I don't want to beat a dead horse. It's why we developed the Parent Masterclass, is to accelerate you developing your eye for football. And that way you don't say dumb things to your kid, right? And you say smart things to your kid. I'm just thinking that his son is 13 years old and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but the kid's 13 years old already. And like in my experience, I don't know what you think about this. When your son in particular, like hits 15, 16, 17, the probability that they're going to be really listening to dad about soccer, especially when they know that dad never played or dad doesn't know, it's going to be tough. You know what I mean? Not like, I understand if everything's possible. I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but I would understand better if the kid was 7 years old or 8 years old. Okay. Now you've got like freaking 8 years, you know, of parent development that you can do for yourself to get really good at the game, smart at the game to talk, but the kid's already 13. You know, you've got a 2 year runway to really get up to speed. And then your kid's going to say, fuck off, dad. I don't know. Maybe the kid wouldn't say that, but I'm trying to answer your question, Benny. I'm just struggling.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think the cool thing about my dad, especially growing up, I mean, he tells us that he played like 1 year of soccer in high school, but then you see him like kick a ball and you're like, what the fuck? This guy has no idea what he's doing. But I think he did a good job of just like after any of our games, I wouldn't say anything tactically, wouldn't say like, oh, why did you make this pass? It was just like, good game. Or, you know, like, you'll get him next time. So I think you and Kirk brought this up in your most recent podcast of so many parents can hinder the development of their child just by saying the wrong things. You know, like, for example, the example that you gave was, you know, Johnny has a shocking game and the parent gets in the car and the mom or the dad is, oh, Johnny, fantastic game. You know, your teammate should have passed you the ball more. Don't worry about it. And it's hard as a parent because you want to give all the support and all the answers to your kid. And yeah, they're going to want to give advice. But I think if you don't know the game, I think you just encourage, man. Like, that's why it was really cool for this guy to say, like, just so you know, like, I really don't know anything about the game, you know. Because a lot of parents won't admit to that. A lot of parents sit on the sideline. They've watched their kids play for 2-3 years. And all of a sudden they think they're experts of the game, bro. When that's not the case at all.
Yeah, I think that the best advice that I give parents, and it's universal, and especially in this case, is work on the mental side of the four components of player development. Again, I repeat, there's the technical, there's the tactical, there's the physical, and there's the mental/psychological. Work on that last one, because that last one, you don't have to have kicked a soccer ball. You don't have to have been a world-class athlete or soccer player. You don't have to have been any of those things to develop your kid's mental and psychological state in such a way that, you know, they're up on that curve and they're second to nobody on that curve. You know, it reminds me of Richard Feynman. I don't know if you know who Richard Feynman is. Do you know who Richard Feynman is? Have you even heard of the name? No.
I haven't.
So world-class American physicist, won the Nobel Prize for developing quantum electrodynamics and one of the fathers of the Standard Model. his dad was not a world-class scientist or physicist or anything like that. His dad was just a blue-collar sort of worker. If I'm not mistaken, I think he was a salesman of some sort. But there's countless stories, you know, from Feynman himself and others that his dad is credited a lot by his son for helping his son become a world-class scientist in many respects by simply developing his son's insatiable appetite of curiosity, you know? So he made his son a super curious human being or at least nurtured that. And that is one of the foundational principles to being a good scientist or actually to being a good intellect of any sort, right? Is to being super curious. So here's just a sample case where the guy didn't know how to do science. You know what I mean? The guy didn't know dick about physics, and his son ended up winning the Nobel Prize in physics. So the same story here, in my opinion, is like, okay, you don't know how to kick a ball. You don't know what is good tactics or bad tactics. You don't know any of this sort of stuff. You don't know how to develop a player's body for soccer. No problem. Work on the mental side of the equation.
I'll have to look that guy up, dude. What's his name again? Richard what?
Richard Feynman, F-E-Y. Yeah, you have to read Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman. It's a good little short book. I want you to pick it up. You said you liked Oppenheimer. You said you kind of like these sorts of scientist stories. And you need to look into them.
I will, dude. Well, dude, I know I'm sad because I always give you movie recommendations and you never watch them, bro.
I'm short on time, Benny. I'm short on time. Hey, and you'll like Feynman too, because he's one of these characters that is not the prototypical or stereotypical nerd scientist. This guy was out there banging all kinds of chicks. This guy was like 100%. This guy was a rock star, dude, doing crazy things, going and picking locks of top secret institutions, you know, just to see if he could, like all kinds of stuff.
All right, dude, I'm in for sure. I think that story you told, Gary, perfectly relates to how the parents can best help their kid, because I think if you instill that love of the game in the child, then you're not even going to have to do so much of the coaching. I mean, the kids are going to be hungry themselves to go out and play and get on the wall. But I think if you're constantly babying them or coddling them or always saying like, oh, what a great game, you know, Gary, I'm sure you've seen so many players that have gone through your guys' cycle where the parent just had such a negative effect on the kid. And even though they had so much natural talent, just their mentality was the reason that they didn't make it, bro. Mentality is everything, dude.
100%, man, especially at that next level. It's good that this kid already had one experience at least where he wasn't making the quote unquote first team. So he kind of knows what struggle is like and failure is like at that level. It'd be a lot worse if this man child, right, never had a struggle at all. He was always like the rock star. Then it's even more damaging.
What do you think, Gary, about parents that maybe do have a background in the game and are practitioners of the games themselves, maybe not as coaches, but are heavily involved in the game, you know, played college or high school soccer, played club soccer? Do you think that those parents, like, where's the line of how much advice they should be giving their kids, you know, on the car ride homes or before training, after training? Should those parents leave it to the coach? Or do you think, I know it's a hard question, but, you know, how much advice should those parents be giving?
I think they're the most dangerous. No, they're the most dangerous because if you've played a little or sometimes even played a lot, maybe you even played like college level ball or something like that, you know, there's this psychological effect that it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Yeah. Where you kind of like learn a bit about something, you know, and all of a sudden you think that you really are an expert and you really know this sort of stuff and you behave accordingly. Right. So they could be leading their kid down a black hole that they never recover from, you know? So for example, if you played college, let's say during my time, right? So 20 years ago, if you were playing Division I college soccer, and 20 years ago, Division I college soccer was like the peak of soccer, right? For people of that age. And now you're in your 40s or something like that, and you have a kid and the kid is, you know, a teenager or going to be a teenager or something. And what did you learn in college 20 years ago? I'll tell you what you learned in college 20 years ago. It wasn't building out of the back. It wasn't any of the stuff that, you know, we all know in modern football, how to actually play the game properly. It was all improvisation. It was all the coach kind of picks his starting 11, throws him out on the field and kind of like, okay, whoever wins, wins. Whoever has the best roster, I guess, is going to win the game. And it was a whole bunch of long ball and just running mindlessly and no receiving across the body, no losing your man, no attacking patterns, nothing, Benny. Okay, so imagine you were playing Division I college soccer. That was your whole experience in your youth and in college. And then you retired, whatever, and now you have a kid and you don't coach, like you said. Maybe you don't even coach stuff, so you don't even understand that component. Chances are you probably think you know a lot about football, and you're going to be talking to your kid a lot about football. And the probability is, I'm being sincere because I know a lot of these guys. That's why I brought up this thought, right, or this anecdote. Chances are you're going to be guiding your kid down into a black hole that they'll never recover from. You're telling him the wrong things about how to play football. So those are the most dangerous ones, in my opinion. Is it better than not knowing anything? Probably not. I don't know what I just said there. I think it's still better than not knowing anything is what I meant to say, because at least you could kind of teach your kid while he's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, how to maybe kick a ball, you know, properly. And you can actually go out to the park and play with the kid a little bit. So that'll definitely develop the kid a lot. And you'll have a better eye for discernment also of, I don't know, in the ecosystem, because you're also connected, I should say, right? You have a network if you play the game too. So you can play the political game a lot better also if you've been in the ecosystem a long time. So their kid is probably better off. But man, it's a good question, Benny. This is something we should unpack a little bit more, because I've been exposed to a lot of situations where the kids are let off a cliff by the parent who thinks that they actually know ball.
Yeah. No, it must be hard though, Gary, because, you know, my son's not even born yet. And I've always told all my peers and coaching friends, like, I don't want to coach my son's team, like no chance. But I can already envision myself, you know, after a game and the kid has a shocking performance or he's not doing the fundamentals. Like, obviously I know all this stuff. I've been doing this with you guys for the past 10, 15 years, absorbing it all. Like, how can I not tell this guy, like, dude, what are you doing, bro? You know? And so yeah. I can see why these parents try to have such a big influence, such a big role. The ones that bother me, Gary, are, like you said, the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? The parents that think they know it all, and then they'll go to the coach and say, you know, you should be playing Johnny in this position, or, you know, Johnny does better when as a left back instead of a right back. It's like, why are you even paying this coach? Or why do you have your kid in this environment if you're not going to let the coach do his thing and learn from him? You know, those are the ones that I think really negatively impact their kids.
You know, it's interesting. Do you remember when Messi and Suarez first came to the Miami office of MLS? That's called Inter Miami, you know? There were pictures flying around. I think I'm recollecting it properly. There were pictures flying around, or maybe they were still in Barcelona. No, I think they were here. Pictures flying around of them sitting on the sidelines, yeah, while their sons were playing games and stuff. And they made, you know, all these memes about it, like, oh, see, this is how parents should behave on the sideline. You don't see Messi or Suarez up and yelling at their kid or participating in the match from the sidelines, all this stuff. What a stupid, terrible example to use. Do you really think that Messi and Suarez aren't educating their kids outside of that environment how to play soccer, or how to, you know what I mean? Like, what is right and what is wrong, and how to position yourself and how to play and when to do this and when not to do that? You think they're just like zero information to their kids and they're just letting their kids out there do whatever the kid? No chance, man. And you think that Messi and Suarez on the drive home or in the dinner after a match, you know what I'm saying? Or whenever, you think that they're not saying, hey, Mateo's like Messi's son. Hey, you know that one pass you gave in this opportunity, you know, next time, blah, 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 blah. You think that's not happening? Come on, ladies and gentlemen, please.
Zero chance, bro. Zero chance. No, but I will say.
Zero chance.
Yeah, I will say during the game, they're super, super tranquilo, just calm, chilling, you know. But like you said, guaranteed after the game, like, yeah, dude, they're for sure going into tactics at the dinner table?
Well, there's just massive development between father and son happening outside the team training and team playing environment. Massive amounts. So why, and also, why are they chilling on the sidelines? Because they're outrageously powerful men in the soccer ecosystem. What does it matter, you know, whether the kid plays or doesn't play or is doing well or isn't doing well, or if the team is shit or if the team is good? It doesn't matter at all. Their sons' futures are assured. Just like Cristiano Ronaldo's son, their future is assured. Like, look at our former U.S. men's national team players who are now, again, in their 40s and 50s or whatever, and they have kids that are teenagers or in their early 20s. Their futures were assured from the beginning. They're going to be elevated because of the network effect and because they obviously got educated in soccer. So there's no reason for daddy to be yelling or talking or complaining about the coach on the sidelines when the kid is 10 years old. Of course they're not going to do that. It's irrelevant. Yeah. But if you're not Messi, if you're not Suarez, if you're not Claudio Reyna, if you're not these guys, and you're just a zero nobody who nobody even knows you, you know, and nobody even cares about developing your kid, because that's another point. If Benny, imagine if you had Messi and Suarez kid on your team, do you think you're going to be working harder or being a bum, you know, in training and in trying to develop the team and trying to develop the kids? Chances are you're probably going to be working at your absolute maximum potential, Benny, as a coach, to do your very best for those kids and everybody else. So it's all good. Messi doesn't have to say anything.
No, dude, there was another meme, like the same exact pictures. And they're like, imagine giving the team talk and Messi's son is on your team and he's in the background looking at, like, guarantee you that guy stays up all night planning the sessions to ensure that he's running the best possible. You know, he doesn't want to let Messi down or Suarez down.
If you're the coach, you don't want to look like a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, for sure. You're right, dude. And like you said, the power, when you said that, it reminded me of when Danny used to coach for the Galaxy. I'll never forget this dude. And they were playing a tournament on the East Coast and they were playing against like DC United or something. And Danny goes to look at the roster and like on the roster at the very bottom is Baron Trump, bro.
What?
Yeah, Baron Trump, bro.
Serious?
During Trump's first term, like this guy got Baron into like the DC United Academy. I'm sure he like never played. I swear, bro. I swear. But Danny called me. He's like, hey, I think I'm playing Trump's son next weekend, bro.
Well, was he a center back? Tall, athletic center back, dude? Like this kid.
No, but think about it, dude. He was probably shocking. He probably told his dad, like, hey, I want to play soccer. You know, this guy makes one call and all of a sudden he's on DC United's academy team.
There's a lot of that going on, man.
Yeah, dude. A lot. What do you think about Sebastian Berhalter, bro?
I think a lot of the same things that I think about all the kids of these former national team players. And nepotism, for sure. But you still have to be a good enough player to benefit from the nepotism. Does that make sense? Like you can't be a slob. Like Baron Trump that you just told me is not going to be on an MLS team or is not going to be called to the U.S. men's national team. Doesn't matter how powerful you are. It ain't going to happen. Like you at least have to have some base level of skill. So I think something like that with Berhalter's kid. He's a good player. Special? No. Good enough to play MLS? Of course. Good enough to be on the national team? I think there are 150 players, American players, that are good enough to be on the U.S. men's national team. So if there's one thing that the Club World Cup has kind of exposed, the American public in particular too, is that the levels between professional players and professional teams, the gaps aren't that huge. Like when you look at the box score, you know what I'm saying? When you see the final result or when you look at the statistics, you know, this team took this many shots versus this team took this many shots, the gap isn't monumental. So you can have a trash professional team lose only 2-0 to Chelsea or lose only 2-1 to Bayern Munich or something. You know what I'm saying? That's a totally feasible thing, but the gap is enormous, if that makes sense. So how am I correlating this with players like Sebastian Berhalter? and my comment that 150 American players could be on the men's national team, and the level is basically the same. It's also true that the gap isn't enormous, right, between players. Like Christian, okay, kind of like an outlier for sure. He's a little bit different. But get the whole midfield or get the back line or whatever, and you've got four or five players deep in each position, which is basically plug and play. They're all kind of the same, Benny. So Sebastian Berhalter, whatever, decent player, national team player, whatever, sure, no big deal.
Yeah. No, that's the comment that I was going to bring up, Gary. It's like, how many other players are on the same exact level as him, or maybe even better? Like Hispanic heritage got overlooked, and they're not on the national team because their last name is not Berhalter, or their last name's not Reyna. You know, it's, I don't know. I feel like we're missing out on a lot of talent in this country.
That's the one thing that usually gives you the leg up over others. If there's two players that are equal, right, the guy with the network or the nepotism gets elevated. Or even if they're not equal, you know, player A might be a little bit higher than player B, but if player B has that little bump, you know, he'll get the opportunities instead. This is just reality.
Right. No, and not to discredit, you know, his capabilities, because like you said, I mean, you still have to perform at a certain level. You know, if he was absolutely shocking, he's not going to be on the national team. But again, it's that nepotism, bro. And it's everywhere.
And fair game, man. Don't hate the player, hate the game, right?
Yeah, true. Well, Gary, we talked a lot about player evaluations coming from parents. I wanted to briefly chat on, honestly, dude, I think this might be my favorite module within the coaching education platform. This one is in phase four, and it's player evaluations. And within this one, I think there's about 4 hours maybe of audio, and it's literally just a black screen, and you see the transcription, and it's Brian chatting with the players, but also the parents. And you're in the room, and I believe a couple of other coaches are in the room. First, I want to just get your memory or your recollection of these experiences. If people have access to this and they haven't gone through it, I think it's insanely beneficial, not only to help you to do this with your own players, but to kind of give you an idea of what Brian and you and the entire staff were looking for, right? The mentality of the player, their work rate, their effort, their consistency. You know, those are some pretty big themes within these conversations. The thing that stuck out the most to me was just like the brutal honesty, man. You know, some of these conversations are difficult, and you were telling a player why he didn't get selected to go with the team to Spain, you know, or why he's not getting a call up for the national team when his teammates are. So one, I wanted to get your recollection of these recordings. If you remember, I mean, you say that these happened in 2014. So can you give me kind of your experience being in those rooms?
Yeah. So I've been in those rooms a lot, Benny, over many, many years. I think we recorded maybe... We just record a subset of all the conversations we've had over many, many years, obviously, because we weren't always recording this stuff. My recollection was it was during the Chivas USA days, and the age level, I think, was maybe U16, maybe? I'm not even sure anymore. But it was a mixture of English and Spanish. So I'm surprised, you know, you tell me that you listened to the whole thing. I know we captioned everything.
There's subtitles,
but
there's subtitles, so it helps. But what's insane, Gary, is that back then when you did it, there was no Descript. So for people correct. That don't know, Descript is what we use to, you know, publish and edit these podcasts. You literally upload the audio files and it transcribes everything for you. You know, I think back then when you guys did this, somebody was probably typing it word for word.
All by hand, man.
And to go along with it, there's a PDF file that transcribes the entire conversations. Literally 4 hours of hard work. Who did you get? Did you do that yourself or?
No, that was Choco. That was Choco. I got Choco doing that, man.
No wonder there's so many typos, bro.
Yeah, no, I'm sure we should probably go back and digitally remaster that whole thing, you know? But Choco, for people who don't know, obviously we're always going to have people, you know, as part of the team who are soccer competent. You know, I can't just hire somebody off the street to do this sort of stuff. So again, Jose Gomez, Choco, Herman Trophy finalist, you know, played D1 college at Creighton, was an All-American, played a little bit of professional soccer, and then dedicated himself to his career with his degree. But he did good work considering what it took. It is a lot of work, Benny, of work. So what do I remember about those things? I think it was principally that, Ben. It was the emphasis is usually on the mentality side, on the effort side, on the discipline side, on the habit side, because if you get those things in line, then the rest of the things fall in place. And for the players who were doing really good, you know, throughout the season or whenever, we would obviously credit them, but at the same time, try to bring them back down to earth and not let them think that there's something super special or special, or that it would continue that, or that their success would continue, you know, with their playing time or with their youth national team call-ups or all that sort of stuff. It's like, good job, buddy. But that doesn't mean it's going to be like this next year, you know, because everybody's competing here and everybody wants to eat your lunch. And if you relax a little bit too much, somebody is going to eat your lunch. And then the exact opposite for the players who maybe did not get many minutes or might be feeling down because their buddies are getting called to the national team and you aren't getting called to the national team, all these things. It's kind of like the opposite. Hey, you're down now, kind of, but I promise you, because we're very experienced, if you continue working hard or double, you know, what it is that you're doing and don't get down on yourself and don't get discouraged and just put your head down and keep working, eventually things will pan out for you, you know, and we paint a bright future for them under conditions A, B, and C, you know? So it's always in a positive light, but like you said, it's harsh truth. Don't get it wrong, audience. We're not sugarcoating it to the players. We give it to them real and straight.
Yeah. No, that's one of the things I noticed. And a big thing also that I saw, Gary, first of all, like you and Brian, I think you guys had a great rapport with all the parents, you know, and just your personality showed. I mean, like the second that they would walk in, like either you or Brian, like almost every parent that walked in would say like a one-liner or something that would make them laugh, you know, to get them feel comfortable. But another massive thing that I noticed was that every evaluation started with thanking the parents, meaning like, thank you so much for your sacrifice, for taking them to training, always having them ready on time. And I think that goes a long way with the parents as well. But it's just really fascinating also to see how far that you and Brian were willing to go for the players and the amount of extra stuff that went into it. Like, for example, one of the parents was saying like, oh, like, I apologize, I've been late, I've been doing this new training at work, like I can't get the kid there on time. And you know, you hear Brian come back with like, all right, how about for the next 3 weeks, I'll pick him up, you know, like I'll text you when I'm on the way. And it just goes to show you the amount of extra work and time and dedication that went in behind the scenes that a lot of people don't realize. But I think that was the biggest thing for me, was the relationship that you guys had with those players. And I think if you don't have that type of relationship, and then you tell them these hard truths, like, hey, your technical game isn't good enough, then they're like, oh, what the fuck, this guy's a dick to me, you know. But the fact that you guys had such a good relationship with all the players, it made those conversations seem a little bit more easy, you know. And for the most part, all the parents came back with, yeah, Brian, Gary, I agree, like, thank you guys so much, I want him to keep working, keep getting better. Like, very rarely did I hear a parent say, I disagree with you. Or I did hear one dad say like, oh, you know, you didn't play my son in this game, that's your decision. I think in the last game he didn't perform because his teammates around him were underperforming and it made him look bad, you know. So that was one instance where a parent, you know, had pushback, you know. So not every conversation is gonna go the way that you want it, but the fact that you guys always showed love, I think it made those conversations easier to digest. That makes sense?
It does. And beyond the love component, which is critical, you hinted at it. It's everybody saw that we would work, you know what I'm saying? Like that Brian would work 24/7, 365. Like you can tell above and beyond your job responsibilities. And as for myself, work and work for free, zero, you know, nothing, you know, actually negative. Because how many times would, like, you probably know this, or actually the older Rage team, how many times would I take players out, you know, to lunch or to dinner, or, you know, just spend money, or me just traveling, you know, spending my own money, you know, to go places and support the activity, support the guys. So they see, when they see people, when they see that you work like a savage, then they have no excuse for not working. But if they see that coach or the technical staff are a bunch of bums and they don't work hard and they don't have good habits and they show up late or they leave early or they make excuses or they, all those negative things, if you see the leadership team or leader doing that, then the leaders have no credibility. You'll never get the players or the families to buy in. So it's just, aside from the love, you know, that it's critical, Ben.
No, man, you guys always went above and beyond. And these conversations seemed a little bit more professional than what I experienced with Brian. Like, even back then when it was just a small time club, I still remember, like, Brian set up a time like twice a year when we'd meet at this Mexican restaurant in Orange, and all the families would come in and sit down with you and Brian for like 20 or 30 minutes. And he would tell us what we're doing good, doing bad. Like, obviously this one, it was, you know, MLS Academy, so it was more professional, but I still have that memory of Brian. And that's another big thing, is that he would make the player feel like really good. There was not one evaluation where he didn't say anything positive. You know what I mean? He always led with, hey, these are all the things that you're doing well. You know, you're always showing up on time, you're committed, your mentality is phenomenal. So I think even just adding that little extra bit of love before you get into the harsh truths, I think that makes it easier for the players to be able to, like, accept what it is that you guys are saying. Because again, not every conversation was, oh, you're a great player. Like, dude, a lot of them were like calling the players out, you know, and these kids are 13, 100%. 14, 15 years old. Like, you're a fat slob, you know. I'm pretty sure maybe you said that once or twice, like, oh, like, you know, when you showed up, you were fantastic, but now, like, you don't care. You're not focused at training. Like, your mentality is shit right now. Like, there was a lot of those conversations too. Like, just absolutely 100% harsh truths, bro, that a lot of coaches probably today, you tell a parent that today and they're picking up and they're leaving your club team, bro.
I'm still glad you brought it up, because up until that point, I think we were coming across as if we were soft, you know, and being with the kids. Oh, we love them. And we always, you know, try to be positive and tell them the good things too. Nah, like, if they hear, right, the trans, it's rough. It's pretty rough, man. Yeah. I'm trying to remember who I called a slob. Was it Ephra? Maybe it was Ephra that I called a slob.
Probably. But look at him now, dude. Mexican national team.
Yeah, Ephra, Mexican national team. Purchased by Chivas from Cholos for millions and millions of dollars. He's probably now in the seven-figure salary range too. So amazing for him, man. But yeah, I think it may have been Ephra I called a slob. It's because I'm trying to remember another player that I would call a slob. I'd have to revisit the lesson.
Yeah, you should. I guarantee you he remembers those conversations, though, getting his ass woken up. The cool thing about Ephra's conversation was his dad was backing you guys up too, saying like, oh, you know, they're right. I don't know, dude, because I feel like a lot of people don't have access to this one because it's phase four, right? So phase four members, but I don't know, dude. I want more people to hear these, dude, because, man, it's just so valuable. So valuable.
Yeah. And before anybody emails me saying, hey, Gary, I heard, but it's in phase four, like, what the fuck? You should put that in phase one, you know, or something like that. I'm not going to do that. Okay. The philosophy is the philosophy in our program. It needs to be systematic. There's levels to this thing, and you go up. Would it be valuable? Yes. If I throw in everything in the kitchen sink at the very beginning, whoever joins the program at the very beginning has everything under the sun. They got everything that we have. You would accomplish nothing. You would accomplish nothing. You would sit there and you would, I don't know, be like Scrooge McDuck, you know, jumping into the money bin and swimming in the gold coins all the time and never accomplish a goddamn thing because you're always consuming content. Ooh, I want more content. Give me more content. But you don't put the content into practice. So no, phase one is supposed to accomplish a very specific thing for the coaches, and that's it. Phase two, something else. Phase three, something else. Phase four, something else. If you want to accelerate to the different levels, to phase two, phase three, fine. Email me and we'll accelerate you. I highly discourage people when they ask me, you know, hey, Gary, can I renew my membership early, you know, and pay early so I can get next year's content? I say, I don't know. Are you sure? I highly discourage it. If you want to, fine, we can work. And by the way, it's work on my end because I have to do manual things on the back end too. So it's never been about money for us, Benny. I've said it a million times. So I kind of want people not to do that, even though we would get money for it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll release like a small 3-minute excerpt or something.
Sure. Maybe. That's fine. No problem. I mean, I wish if I just had time, maybe I would be able to do like a la carte things. Oh, Gary, I'd like... Can I get the scouting module or something like that,
only,
and you can do a la carte purchases. But guys, if you knew how it's a two-man show here, it's me and you, Benny, nobody else is working this stuff. And from a technology perspective, it's a one-man show. It's me only. So it's complicated.
Yeah. Gary, within those evaluations, would you guys spend a lot of time beforehand prepping? Like talking with the staff and saying, hey, this is the message that we kind of get across? Or because I know you and Brian are extremely good at off the cuff stuff and improvisation, meaning like any player from his team could have walked in and I feel like Brian could have said the same exact things. But did you guys spend a lot of time preparing before?
Kind of like yes and no. So we would speak daily on the team, on every single player, on the training session, on the game and what happened in the game, on the next game. Like this was an everyday communications about all of the players. We knew all of the players inside and out, backwards and forwards, in our sleep. You know, I knew Brian's opinions of every player. He knew my opinions of every player. So we could wing a parent meeting, no problem. So if you call that preparation, yes, we're very prepared for these things. If it was specific for the parent meeting, yes, but probably just a little bit, Benny. We don't have to say much. We would maybe convene about a particular player and say, hey, what are we going to tell Lucas or something like that, you know? And maybe we'd highlight maybe the two or three key things that we need to get across, and that's it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, last thing on this topic, what about for like the Ephras and the Mendes? Is obviously at those ages that the players were performing extremely well. You know, there's always things that they could work on, but you brought it up a little bit before, but you mentioned this, the phrase of like bringing them back down to earth. You know, how would you guys go about doing that? Especially with how like just God given talent that they had and the way that they were performing. How do you find the balance of saying, hey, you're this phenomenal player, but at the same time, like, dude, you can't get complacent. You need to keep working. You know, what was the message for those guys?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to also stories. And since Brian in particular is a reservoir of soccer knowledge, he could just tap into that reservoir at any point and whip out stories of former players and whip out stories of just professional players, you know, world-class players or players that everybody knows. Or since we had a lot of Mexican-Americans, he could also tap into the Mexican football reservoir of knowledge that he had and whip out players from Chivas or America or Cruz Azul or Necaxa or Toluca or what at will and say, hey, do you remember Turco Mohamed? Yes, of course I know Turco Mohamed, the 14-year-old kid would tell us. You know what I'm saying? And he's like, okay, well, let me tell you about Mohamed. Like, this is what happened to him, you know, during these years or those years or whatever. And this is what ended up, like, he'd give you a whole story of players who were amazing and then fucked it all up, you know, and because of X, Y, and Z reasons, you know. So, hey, Ephra, just because you're crushing it now, you're the best and all that stuff, it doesn't mean dick, you know what I'm saying? We need to get you to become a somebody in football, and you're still a long ways away from that. Are you a professional player now, Ephra? No. Okay. So why the fuck would you think you're something special? You're not even a pro yet. Oh, well, do you think maybe it's inevitable that you're going to be pro? It's not inevitable you're going to be a pro. Let me tell you another story about these players here who were on youth national teams and played youth World Cups, and they never even became pro. Or they did become pro, and they lasted 1 year, And then they got cut and were never heard from again. And they were like World Cup U20 or U17 World Cup phenoms. Like there was rumored that, you know, Spanish clubs, La Liga clubs wanted to get the kid over there, but he couldn't because of a passport issue. So he had to stay in America. And then he signed MLS and he played, you know, one season with an MLS team and got like 12 minutes and never was never heard from again. You know, so all we could just whip out story after story after story of failure and failure and failure when these guys were amazing super phenom cracks at age 15 or 14 or 13. And the kid will know what's true, or at least the father who also knows soccer will know it's true, because the father would also be nodding his head because we'd be talking in their language about their country's professional players and history. Like we fucking just could whip out players from Mexican football as examples. And the father knows because he's hardcore about it all. So guess what the dad's going to tell the kid too, you know, on the car home and dinner throughout the next month, throughout the next year. So when usually that is the most effective, in my opinion, when you have a super phenom at those ages, is how you can maybe help or attempt to bring them down to earth, is you tell them those sorts of stories.
Right. And I think that was a big part of the success that, you know, Brian and yourself were able to achieve, is that especially as a young kid, when you're the people that you look up to or your mentors or your coaches, when they, and you can tell, right, they know what they're talking about. They love the game. They have the personality. They show you that they care about you. I think it inspires you so much as a player. And there's also that feeling of like, damn, like, I don't want to let these guys down, bro. You know, because look at how much work they're putting into me. Look at how much they care about me. Like, oh shit, this coach is willing to pick me up, even though it's going to take him an extra 20 minutes or spend gas money on me. And for the kids, it's just, you know, I think it's really inspiring. And I think that's why, obviously not the only reason, but a massive part of the success was a lot of the behind the scenes stuff and building that rapport and those relationships with those players and those families. You know, because
yeah, but the parents are critical in this regard, because yeah, we can only do so much. We can only inspire so much, because inspiration, in my opinion, Ben, is in math, we call it a transient function. So you have a function and it has a huge spike, right? And then it like quickly decays back down to normal low levels, right? So when you get inspired, it's like that. You have a massive spike. You're like, oh, I'm inspired. Let's do something. Woohoo! Let's hit the gym. Let's pump some iron or whatever. And then 40 minutes later, an hour later, the inspiration is gone and you're back to being the same bum that you were moments ago. You know what I'm saying? So this is why the parents are critical, because the parents are there 24/7 with their kid. So they can always be pumping them. Pump once, it decays. You pump it again, it decays. You pump it again, it decays, until the kid reaches a new higher level instead of being a low level bum.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's why it's also important to have the good relationship with the parents, you know. And like I mentioned, the fact that, how did Brian start every meeting? Thank you guys so much. Thank you for your sacrifice. You know, none of this is possible without you guys. And when you have that type of relationship with the parents, it enables them to not only trust in you, but also to, for example, we talked about on the car rides home, you know, like, oh, this is what your coach is saying. 100%. He is correct. You should be listening to him. If the parent doesn't respect you, you don't have a good relationship, I'm guarantee you there's parents on the way home talking shit on the coach or saying, no, you shouldn't listen to this guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about, you know? So that relationship right there is critical, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't win them all, Ben. And I feel bad for the coaches, because you get paid like shit and you're expected to work like a slave as if you were being paid $1 million a year, you know? And to do all these things. So I have nothing but respect for the coaches, and like the coaches who don't do all this stuff, I don't blame you. I get it. And especially when you try to do all this stuff and you still get effed or backstabbed or it's not appreciated in any way, man, that's rough, dude. So I get it. If at some point a coach, after years of banging his head against the wall, becomes jaded and he like throws in the white towel and he's like, fuck it. You know, I'm just going to show up at the times that the club tells me to show up. I'll do my job, but I'm not doing any more than that. I get it.
Yeah. Massive respect to all the coaches out there, dude.
No, man. Even the guys that, with every fiber of my being, I know that they're doing things really wrong. I still don't blame them. Even the ones out there who are suffering, and so I see it on X all the time, they're suffering from massive Dunning-Kruger, massive Dunning-Kruger. They fucking know. And it's a clown show. They don't know anything, you know, and they're out there trying to educate people. This is how it is, or this is how it should be. And it's annoying as hell, but I still don't blame them. I mean, unless they're doing it on purpose or maliciously, or they're consciously being grifters, then okay, then I have a massive issue with you.
Yeah. Hey, dude, somebody commented on your episode with Kirk, like, oh, well, I'm proud of Gary. He had nearly a perfect clean sheet when it comes to his language.
Yeah, it was very professional. But yeah, I told you, I can hold it. I can be professional, Benny. This is just a 3-4-3 podcast. So I'm just going to let it all hang out. Right. But if I'm in somebody else's home, like Kirk Kinsey's podcast, that's his home. I'm going to be professional. I'm going to be diplomatic. I'm perfectly capable of doing that. I have no issue with that. I'm going to be very respectful. But this is my home. And in my home, when we talk soccer, we drop F-bombs.
One of these days, dude, we'll have to bring up or mention. I always laugh on this. Like, what? You told me about your meetings with Ajax or with Barca, and you show up like in a t-shirt and jeans or sweatpants or something. Legend.
No. When I met with the Barcelona executives, I was professional, bro. I was
proper. So you suited up? You suited up?
No, but not like that, bro. I don't do fucking suits. Okay. I don't do that shit. I'll be respectful. I have a nice, clean, high quality black t-shirt. Put on some nice jeans with some nice shoes. That's good enough. That's great.
Legend, bro. No Mickey Mouse shirt.
It's better. No, yeah. No Mickey Mouse shirt. No sweatpants. You know what I'm saying? No flip-flops. Like, I'm going to be respectful. But no, legend, I'm not going to dress up like some, I don't want to, yeah, vocabulary. Okay, I'm restraining myself. I'm not going to dress up like a suit and go in there pretending like, I don't know.
Have you ever worn
like I'm the Rock from Ballers or something like that? I'm not going to do that.
Have you ever worn a suit, bro?
Of course. When I have to, when I'm obligated to, I'm not going to show up to a wedding, you know, in the improper attire.
All right, dude. Send a picture. I'll post it on this episode.
Yeah, I don't think there's any evidence of me in a suit. You know who's cool? Do you know who Palmer Luckey is?
No.
Palmer Luckey. He's the guy who created Oculus, right? Oculus is the VR headset, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And then he got acquired by Facebook for billions of dollars. And then Facebook fired him for donating money to Trump back in 2016. And there's this whole backstory. And now we start a new company. It's called Andril, weapons contractor. He's still a super young guy. Like, I don't know. I think he might be in his late 30s or something like this. Bro, the guy wears a Hawaiian shirt, shorts, flip-flops when he goes and gives talks at conferences or when he has high-level meetings and stuff like that. That guy, he has a mullet. That guy's a legend, bro. You should look it up, dude. Palmer Luckey. That's another one for you.
For sure. No, I mean, you see a lot of billionaires, bro. They just keep it casual, dude. I'm not saying you're a billionaire, but jeans, t-shirt, keep it comfy, man.
I think a lot of the tech people, right? People in tech, they just don't play that game. I don't play that game. The whole perception game, right? The whole, we hate the perception game. We hate the status games, you know, we hate the word games of who can, you know, go back and forth on Twitter, who has the better comeback or the better words, you know, and play those stupid little battles. All that shit's politics. All that shit's fucking retarded for us. We just want to get shit done and build things. And wearing a suit doesn't get shit done or builds things. It does not. Fucking working does that.
All right, bro. We went from evaluations to wearing suits, bro.
Okay, but you had to get me triggered at the end of the episode and you kind of got a little spark.
I always do, bro. I always find a way. Good stuff, man. That was good.
Okay.
I guarantee you're going to get emails like, Gary, can I please get access to these recordings of the evaluation?
I already warned them here. I said it ain't happening.
Continue on your coaching membership to Phase 4.
Actually,
there are a lot of people out there, no? Within Phase 4 already? There's a good,
yeah, there's a shit. There,
The program has a ton of coaches, man. A ton of coaches who are beyond phase four already. There's still a whole bunch of coaches who are still founding members who started up in 2014. This is a lifelong thing, buddy. But I will say, if people want to send me Bitcoin to develop an a la carte sort of thing, maybe I'll consider it.
Legend, bro. There you go. You have massive amount of people sending Bitcoin, I bet.
That would incentivize me to develop what the people want.
What about the 343 coin? You still gonna make that?
No 343 coin around here. We don't do that garbage crypto stuff. No chance.
No. All right, brother. I won't trigger you anymore.
Okay. Very good. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.